this was not taken in Brazil, of course, because we don't have icebergs in Brazil. Actually, it's not taken in the North Hemisphere. It was taken in Patagonia, in the very south of Argentina. And the thing I want to call your attention for that is that water, the thing that everybody thinks is common, and actually here in Canada is pretty common in all its forms, different forms, it's the only liquid that you find in nature, in your usual nature, that you can find in the three states in the atmosphere. Like you can find in the solid, in the liquid, in the water vapor phase, in the planet, not in the lab, but in the planet. And that's strange. Okay, now you can see better the picture. Okay, that's for some Brazilians when it's, you know, this is just a picture. They never saw snow. A Brazilian can live all their lives without ever seeing snow, okay? Or this kind of ice stuff. And I'm coming for 30 centigrades, okay? Okay, anyway, so the talk will be more or less following this whole map. What's the mystery about water? Why you should care about the mystery? What the clues, what the hypothesis, what are results, and how can you use water anomalies? Okay, so we are going to talk about water anomalies, but before that, I want to introduce my happy group in Brazil and that are now in 30 centigrades. So what's the mystery? Water, the simple thing that you take for granted in every day of life, have 72 anomalies. What I mean about anomaly? I mean that water behaves different from all the water materials in 72 properties. And I always say that people get really astonished when they talk about silica and other, you know, semiconductor materials, because they can do all the good, you know, electronic stuff that we are using. And those materials have one or two interesting properties. Water have 72 properties. I'm not going to talk about all the properties because we don't, you know, the seminar have a short time for that, but I'm going to mention a few of these properties. And the first one is the specific heat. The amount is more or less the amount of heat you have to give to a system in order to increase 1 centigrade. And here I'm comparing water in this blue line with methanol. Like methanol will be the normal liquid. And what you can see are two things. The first thing is that as you increase temperature in methanol, the specific heat, the amount of heat you have to give to heat up the system, 1 centigrade, increases monotonically. For water, this is the case up to 40 centigrades, or where I like to call where we are, we human beings. Below that, just go bananas. Just start to increase again. So this is one of the anomalies. Why water have this minimum in the specific heat? But I want to call your attention for a second thing, is the fact that the water have twice, they are in slightly different units, they are in kilo, here and not kilo, but you just divide by 1,000 and you'll be in the same units. But still, water has twice the specific heat of methanol. And so water have a very high specific heat. And what does it mean? This mean, it's very hard for me to give this example here because I don't think you're going to make a lot of sense for you, but for Brazilians it makes. When you go to a beach, the sand in the beach, a hot beach, very hot beach, the water is 26 centigrade. But the sand in the beach, very white sand, so reflects also almost as much as water. The sand in the beach will be hot. And the reason why the sand will be in the beach will be hot, because the sand has a specific heat that's much lower than water. It will be really hot when you go. The water will be 26 centigrade. That's for Brazilians, not, you know, very hot water, it's okay water. But at night, when you go to the beach, because we also go to the beach during the night, the sand will be fresh because of the low specific heat, the temperature is going to go quickly down, but the water is going to keep a little bit of warm. So it needs a lot of heat to warm up, but also to take a lot of heat to the temperature to go down. And that's a wonderful thing for us, because we are 70% of water. And thanks to this huge specific heat, our temperatures don't go bananas, you know, because you need a lot of heat to heat up. You need to take a lot of heat to the temperature to go down. So that's a second interesting property of water. Water also have effects in the compressibility. Compressibility is the response when we squeeze something. And here I'm comparing toluene for various pressures, and you see that it's always monotonic, increasing of temperature. Water is monotonic increasing temperature until about 40 something centigrades, where again we have a minimum, and again it goes bananas and start to raise again. The second thing is that the compressibility of water, it's small. What means when something has a small compressibility means that the thing don't extend, you know, stand alone. So the air have high compressibility means that when you do something, it's just spread all over the place, the pressure you're exerting on that. Solid is very, very low compressibility. So when you push, it goes all together. It don't distribute the pressure like that. You know, thanks to the low compressibility of water, we have enough land for us to live. Remember, our planet is 70% covered with water. If water will be higher compressibility, will be covered by water. But the bad thing about the low compressibility of water is that when you have an earthquake on air, it just spread the tension and it dies out quickly. When you have an earthquake on water, it just builds a wall that moves like would be solid. Okay, so there is a good thing about low compressibility. There are a few bad things about low compressibility. Then another important thing is the thermal expansion. Here I'm not comparing with anything, because thermal expansion is so boring quantity, that most materials, they don't vary with temperature. They are just boiling positive with temperature. And it measures the response of the volume with temperature. Okay, so most materials, if you take heat, you know, you're decreasing the temperature of the system. The system just shrinks. You know, just gets compact. And that's why most materials don't have a lot of variation of this variation is this alpha. However, water not only varies a lot, but it gets negative. If you now you come back to the formula, you are going to realize that 1/volume is density, roughly density. So when I have the rho dt changing sign, means that our density will have maximum or a minimum, okay? When it passes through zero, change size. What means that the density of water have a maximum? The vast majority of materials, if you start to decrease the temperature, they accommodate to the minimum of the potential, what means that they pack more, they get more organized, they occupy less volume, they get more dense. But water behaves like that up to 4 centigrades and then changes. And then you have a region in which you decrease the temperature and water just increases the volume. It's a very tiny effect. You can look to the numbers. There are real numbers. It's a tiny, tiny, tiny effect. And this tiny effect actually changes with pressure. Here I'm putting for different pressures. There is a slight change of the temperatures, not a huge change, but there is a slight change of the maximum of density when you change the temperature. Another anomaly, much less known than the maximum of density, is the diffusion. The diffusion coefficient measures how much a molecule moves. I'm not talking about flow. I'm talking about moving. So you calculate the position here, you calculate the position there, you do an average, you see the slope, and you get the D. That is the way you calculate D. Position at one time, position at zero time, you average over all the molecules. That's a linear behavior with time, and you get this D. So what you expect would be the behavior with D with density or pressure. More compact is your system, more particles in your system, more pressure in your system, the particles should move less. They have less space, less mobility. So normal systems, what's going to happen to the diffusion coefficient is that the diffusion coefficient is going to go like that. And we are seeing that in water, you have a maximum. So there is a region in which you compact, you put more particles in the system, and the diffusion just grows and have this maximum. Okay, that's another anomaly. And here I'm just pointing out in the same graph where I have the maximum diffusion, the location of the maximum density, just to show that both things are in the same region in pressure temperature phase diagram. Okay, now why should I care? Why should I bother to understand water too? First, we are 70% of water. Better to understand ourselves to be able to understand what's going on. But also, the planet is full of water. So we have to understand how water responds to temperature and pressure. And when it goes to this weird region where water starts to do things that are not normal. I might remember that between the 72 anomalies, we have the high specific heat. I didn't mention, but there is a super high thermal conductivity, high vaporization level. All that helps to balance us. You know, if you, we need a lot of heat to evaporate water. Fortunately, otherwise, in the summer, in my town, we are going to evaporate totally because it's, we go to 40s easily. Fortunately, water only really evaporates at 100. Low compressibility gives us more land, and the density anomaly gives us the possibility of having life in lakes and rivers. Why that? Because as I showed to you, we have the maximum density at 4 centigrade. Then you have this low density liquid water at 0 centigrade. And the density of ice is even lower, it's about here, 0.97. So when you freeze a river, what happens is that you have a layer of ice floating in water because the density is lower, but that's coexistent with 0 centigrade water. And the comfort 4 centigrade water is lying just in the bottom of the river. So you see that in this way, the frozen goes top to bottom. And with that, we can have a region in which the fish and the plants inside the river can survive. That's not very dramatic. It's very hard to explain that in Brazil. You should understand, we never saw a frozen river in our lives, and you don't care that in other places the rivers are frozen. But then I try to remember people that there, at some point of our history planet, we were frozen. If we would be frozen bottom to top as a normal fluid will do, because in the normal fluid, the more dense will be the solid, so it's going bottom. We'll never be able to have the liquid water for making life to appear. So that property is tiny. You see the numbers, it's a tiny, tiny property that makes a lot of difference. Okay, so now let's go for the clues. What's the different in water that, you know, can help us to understand what's going on in all the system? The first thing is that water different from all the other, you know, simple molecules like CO2, O2, all these molecules are simple in sizes as water, but they are gas in our, you know, in our temperature life. Water is liquid, so there is some reason for water to be liquid. And the reason is that when the oxygen is binding covalently to the hydrogens, there is a balance between these electrons in which the electrons will move more in the direction of the oxygen. And with that, they make a covalent bond that's not like that, but like that. Okay, so you can envision you have the oxygen. Let's see if I have a picture of it. The oxygen, this is a cartoon. The red is the oxygen. The white ones are the hydrogens. And they are not in scale. Oxygen is much bigger in the sense of mass and also electrons. So because we have the 6 valence electrons, 2 pairs here, one is shared with this hydrogen, another one is shared with another hydrogen. And because in this sharing, I always say that the water molecules, the sharing between the oxygens and the hydrogens is like when you share a lunch with a stronger person, taller and stronger, so we share like 90% to the other and 10% for you. So that's the sharing. So most of the time, the electrons are towards the oxygen because they have a more number of protons, so they are more here, and that becomes a polarizable molecule. So locally, there is a polarity in this way and a polarity this way. Because of that, you attract another water molecule here, exactly in this direction, because these want to be further from the side. So they you attract and they you make this hydrogen bond. So the hydrogen bonds are polar creatures. It's a energy thanks to the polarization. And it's not as strong as a covalent bond. It's 20 times weaker, so it's not strong. It's not stable in the sense that you're forming, breaking, and going away. But if you look at any time scale, most of the molecules in the water, liquid water, you make a bond. Then you change bonding here to bonding elsewhere. But if you calculate in a simulation, they are being bonding all the time. And they make exactly like in this cartoon, they can make 4 bonds. And they want to make 4 bonds all the time. And the bonds are tricky. These energetics, they specify that this distance have to be this distance. If it is further apart, the bond is not existing anymore. If the particles, for some reason, they approach here, they debalance because they start to see too much the interaction, the electrostatic from the two sides, and they go away. So it's a picky thing because have to have a certain distance and a certain angle. Okay? And that is the key factor for the presence of the anomalies. So then you start to play with this like Lego, because the green things here are the hydrogen bonds, so you form this, what you call the tremors, that forming the 4 bonds, and they try to organize themselves in many structures. But they have to have the distance. For instance, here I'm making a cartoon of a tetramer close to another tetramer, but so close that's not making hydrogen bonds. To make hydrogen bonds, it have to be a little bit further apart. Now we can understand what happens when you are decreasing the temperature. When you have higher temperature, the temperature makes possible to break these hydrogen bonds and the things spark. As you decrease the temperature, since the minimum is when you have all the bonds done, what happens that you decrease the temperature and the system in order to make the bonds, you just do like that. And that's why ice, you occupy more volume, less dense than liquid water. So just with this picture of hydrogen bonding, we can understand what happens, why you have a maximum density. But let's see if this cartoon, because this is a cartoon, can help us to understand what happens when you have this increase of specific heat that I mentioned, compressibility that I mentioned before. So liquid water will be a mass like that, in which particles will be breaking bonds and forming bonds. But because locally, everybody wants to make the four bonds, even though it's a mass, it's very entropic, locally it's very ordered. It's very organized. So if you look, make a zone in a region in which you have a tetramer, the tetramer is four. So because the specific heat is actually the fluctuation, the square of the fluctuation of entropy, what means that the difference between the local entropy and the average entropy, you can see that locally, I have very little entropy. However, globally, because I'm a mixture of these very organized clusters, I have a lot of entropy. As you go down, you start to have more and more of these local clusters disorganized. And that's why you have this jump, this increase in the specific heat. Because you have this huge imbalance between the local organization and the global organization. The same happens with the compressibility. Compressibility is the fluctuation in volume. And now the thing is the contrary. The local volume is huge because when you have the bonds, you occupy a lot of local volume. The average volume, because you pack this local organization, is smaller, and that's why we have this huge difference between the local volume and the global volume. And that's why you have boom, 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 this huge increase in compressibility as you decrease the temperature. Now, the alpha, the thermal expansion coefficient, the one that changed signs, is actually the crossing of these two fluctuations. And because when the entropy goes down, the volume goes up, that you have the minus alpha. Okay, so with this very intuitive picture, it could somehow explain this increase in compressibility, this increase in entropy. But let's now try to see what you can learn for doing a simulation with a real water. Why I'm putting commas? Because this is one of the many possible models for water. The model we have been using for some time is the SPCE model. What is done here is that you take experimental value for the density in a certain temperature, and you fit parameters for something that's the Lennard-Jones and electrostatic, okay? Here in this model, there is no mass for the hydrogens, and you just have charges placed for the oxygen and in the position of hydrogen. That's one of the many models for water. So what we found using this model for water is exactly the same what the experiments have shown, is the fact that when you calculate the diffusion coefficient, you have, as you increase density or increase pressure, an increase of diffusion. Remember, for a normal material, as you decrease density, you expect that it would be much easier to diffuse, less particles on the way, easier to move. For water, there is a region in which what happens is the contrary. You increase the density and particles move faster. But then you say, what did you learn with the simulations that people didn't know already with the experiments? Okay. But one thing we can do, and the experiments cannot do, is to put a vector in each particle, each water molecule, and see how they are rotating. Why I care about rotating? I care about rotating because the hydrogen bonds are, as I show you in the cartoon, directional. They will be like that. You understand, when I have hydrogen bonds, imagine a cube around me, you have two hydrogen bonds in the diagonal of the cube and the two other ones in the other diagonal of the cube. So for water to move and not break hydrogen bonds, they should rotate, okay? So what we found using different positions, you can imagine that I can put arrows in different sizes of my molecule, but in all of arrows, we found that in the same place in which you have the minimum of the diffusion and the maximum of the diffusion, I have here the more time to rotate. So when particle was diffusing slower, they are rotating slower. When they are diffusing faster, they are rotating faster. One very interesting thing another group, Stanley's group in Boston, showed is that actually are not the same particles that are moving faster that are rotating faster. Actually, the particles moving faster are the neighbors of the particles rotating faster. You understand? So it's like this move and this ones are rotating. You know, like this musicals from the old time in the cinema in which people were going down stairs and people are doing like that, rotating. So the rotating are not moving and the moving are not rotating. Okay, so that's the mechanism. But still I was confused. I know now that they move faster when it's dense, they rotate like crazy in this dance, but I don't understand how it happens. So the first thing I thought, mistakenly thought, is that the average number of hydrogen bonds when you pack, when you move faster, would be 3 or 2. You understand? Because you break, there's no other way to break the bonds and pass forward. But what's mistaken? What's really happened? And that graph shows the frequency, not of hydrogen bonds, because the hydrogen bonds are all the time for hydrogen bonds, but the neighbors. So what is found is that exactly when we have the maximum density, we have, even though we just make 4 bonds, you have 5 or 6 neighbors. There is neighbors that are not bonding. And that the strength of the hydrogen bond is weaker. So actually what it is doing when you pack is just holding one hand and immediately holding another. Because there is a particle with a proper distance for hydrogen bond, but is not bonding. So it's like if you want to walk in a very crowded place, you'd be changing the hands you are holding. It might be very hard for you to understand, but we do that a lot in Carnival, for instance, when it's very packed. So it's water is doing something that actually intuitively we do. And that's the summary what the experiment shows as maximum in the diffusion and maximum in density, and what we can achieve in the simulations in maximum in diffusion, in maximum in density. Of course, because simulations can do stretched water, means they can go to situations in which they are so metastable that it's very hard to achieve in the experiments, like negative pressures. I can see the minimum in the density and the minimum and the diffusion coefficient that so far have not been seen experimental. That's just a phase diagram, a combination of simulations and experimental data from the phase diagram of water. And the thing I want you to pay attention to that is the number of solid phase water have. Because water is this Lego of the tremors, you can, for different pressures, you can have very different solid phase. And because water have this funny increase in the compressibility and in the specific heat, there is this belief that water have deep inside the metastable phase, 2 liquid phases. Let me explain what does it mean. When in general you have a compressibility or a specific heat that jumps like that, this is a signature of a critical phenomenon. Not the liquid gas critical point. You have here a very nice vapor liquid in a critical point where the specific heat you divert, the compressibility, but we are not here. We are about here. So what people claim, and in a moment explain why it's a claim, that's in that little red dot, there is a critical point between two liquid phases that are metastable. It's not possible to see these phases because the system, even if I do very slow experiments, even whatever I do, because the system just crystallizes. The only assumption that they might exist is because every quantity is diverging going towards it. Okay, so you go towards this point in the liquid phase, things start to diverge, but then they're frozen and you cannot see two liquid phases, even if this liquid phase do exist. But that gives us, you know, it's just one vision. It's still we have to understand much better all the other anomalies of water. And because I need to, you know, I have this eager to understand phenomenologically the reasons why water is anomalous, I thought instead of using SPC or any complete model of water, if the anomalies of water, if the fact that you have this increase in specific heat, maximum in density, maximum in diffusion, is just due to the fact that there is a competition between bounding and not bounding, we can, in principle, think and write a much simpler and coarse grain model in which you just have the competition between bounding and not bounding structures. So we could think, in principle, that the tremors are not isolated particles, but the tremors are just one particle that are interacting with another particle to a bounding energy, okay? That's an hypothesis, okay? If this is the thing that makes, if the bounding or non-bounding of these huge structures is responsible for the anomalies, even if I have a huge sphere interacting with another huge sphere through something that's bounding or non-bounding, I could have anomalies. And you imagine that if I am correct, in principle, you could build materials that would have anomalies, the same water anomalies. So what he did? We took the radial distribution function of water, OO of water, that's picture up there. We integrate back that, and we obtain a potential. Okay, so we have an interactal potential that starts with the real molecule. But because this integrates over all the four bonds, you end up with a particle that's equivalent with the tetramer. Okay, so I integrate all the degrees of freedom of this whole structure. And I build a potential that will be equivalent to this interact with another one. And the shape of this potential is something like this blue line, okay? And here I have a little bit of error bar because in this calculation, I transformed something that was not symmetrical, was like water, like that, in symmetrical. And the result of doing that is that I might have a mistake and I'm putting here the error bar. You understand? I made a mistake in this first scale, so I'm allowing myself to be here, here, or here, here, and because I have these different interactions, because of lack of durationality in my potential. So now I'm going to take these spheres in a box, interacting by each one of these color potential, and I'm going to ask myself, is this system like water, in the sense of having the anomaly? So let's take the first one, the green one. And what plotting here is pressure temperature, in which I'm illustrating in this very solid line the region in which you have maximum density. So yes, the potential of spherical symmetrical spheres interacting by two length scales they do have density anomaly. Here I'm plotting the diffusion, and you can see the diffusion have the same effect as observed in water, in the sense that you have an increase in diffusion as you increase density. And this is also represented by these green and red lines there. And something we didn't discuss, we have the second critical point. Remember the hypothetical liquid to liquid phase transition, because I am doing simulations, I can throw away all the solid phase that appear in front of me, and I can be metastable as I wish, and I can find the critical point in the region in which the compressibility and the specific heat diverge. So for this first potential, we do have the density, the diffusion, and the anomalies, and the specific heat, the compressibility. As I make it potential deep, however, the density and diffusion anomaly start to shrink. You can see that a solid line goes shrinking. And if I make more deep, shrinks. And when I make it very deep, it goes away. So this means that on tuning from the real system to my system, I have to be very cautious that the durationality have to be taken into account in the proper way in order to reproduce the anomalies of water. But let's try to understand why, if I make this, now just thinking about two length scales potential, why if I make this closest scale so deep, why you have all the anomalies going away. In order to answer these questions, what I'm going to do is that I'm going to sit down in a density, and I'm going to look at different radio distribution functions at different temperatures. So this is the radio distribution function. Let's see if I can explain what I do in the simulations. I sit down in a particle, and I do average for all the particles. And I count the number of first neighbors, second neighbors, third neighbors, etc., in all the layers and renormalize by the volume. In a normal material, liquid material, the G of R for a liquid we have will not have this bump. You have one bump, no other bump, and it's going to go to one. Okay, so this means it's a translation that liquid means that there is a high probability to find particles in the first layers, but then when you find a particle here, you don't find here, you find something like that. When it's a solid, you have a high peak, a zero, high peak, zero, high peak, zero. In these two length scales materials, you always have one small peak here. This means that I have particles organized further apart in one scale, and I have a region of particles in which they are organized more close. Like would have, like in water, you have water that are bounding, so they are further apart, and water that are not bounded. But remember, here I don't have water, I just have the two length scales, but just is just a representation of what happens in real water. For having the anomalies, you always need that as you increase the temperature of the system or decrease the temperature of the system, as you decrease the percentage of particles that are in this structure further apart, you increase the structure of particles that are closer. Exactly like what happens with water. As I decrease the temperature of water, I have more and more bounded tremors. Okay, so I have more and more particles in this length scale and less in this. So it's a competition between the two length scales. If I make one of the scales too deep, this will not happen. If I make one of the scales, means if I, instead of having a, you know, a hydrogen bond that will be five times the van der Waals, they would be one time the van der Waals, water would not have the anomalies because it's the competition between the van der Waal forces and the hydrogen bond forces. So our results indicate that this balance It's a balance that's very delicate. Okay, that's a summary of our, you know, the experimental, the SPC, and the equative model of phase diagram. Now let's stretch a little bit more our simple model for water. Now what I'm going to look is water confined in nanotubes. And the funny thing about water confined in nanotubes is that when you look to the diffusion now in terms of the nanotube diameter, as you decrease the size of the diameter, you don't have a lot of change in diffusion until you reach something about 2 or 3 nanometers. And as you go down, you reach a point in which the particles don't move. They get stuck inside the nanotubes. But then when you decrease a little bit more, the particles diffuse again. Okay? That's still one thing people quite don't understand quite happens. That's the diffusion. So they are moving like that. They get stuck. It's very easy to understand they get stuck. They get into the minimal interaction between walls and between the particles. But then it skis a little bit more, and they are moving again. Okay? And I thought, oof, maybe this have nothing to do with the details. This have all to do with the fight between length scales. That's what our model has, just length scales competing. If this is true, I can see the, you know, this is just to show the same thing for different temperatures. And this is just to show that when you cut these nanotubes, you see layers of water. So water is organized in nanotubes with layers. So in order to check, maybe this is just to do with competition between length scales, we construct the following structure. This is a 3D structure in which you have a reservoir of our particles, you know, 2 length scales particles in one side, in another side, and a tube. And you're looking to the particles diffusing, not flowing, diffusing in this tube. We are going to use this 2 length scales potential. Remember, the one that gives better regions for density anomaly was the one that have a much smoother shoulder. So we took that. That was derived from the real deal, but it's not water. It's just spheres in a box interacting by 2 length scales. The wall is like we can check many types of walls. We can have walls that just repel water. That would be this hydrophobic. You can have some hydrophilic walls. You always can, the nanotubes are hydrophobic walls, but you can put a cover in the nanotube so you can have hydrophilic walls. And the first thing you found is that you found exactly the same behavior as was predicted for real water. That's when you decrease the size of your nanotube, the particles, the diffusion of particles goes down, down, until you reach a point in which you go up. And if it works, I can show you a video of that. So that's before equilibrating. So after equilibrate, you can see that the particles are moving. That's a huge tube. This is it's a tube that the radius is 4 times the size of each water. That's not water, it's a full tetramer molecule. Now I decrease the size. I get to a point in which particles don't move. Diffusion goes to zero because particles are exactly in their minimal potential, so they don't want to move. But if I decrease a little bit, just a little bit, particles move again. Exactly what happens in the experiments. So here, just to compare, of course, we are rescaling by the bulk diffusion, but you can see exactly the same decrease in the scale factor. And here, just to show that if you cut the tubes, as you decrease the size of the tube, you see this layer. This means that I have a layer of particles here, layer of particles here, layer of particles. This is the center of my tube. That's the border of my tube. So you can see all this layering going on. But let's go on further step. Another thing that's much more interesting than diffusing is flowing. Why flowing is so damn important? Because we are all the time want to build new filters for water because we want to desalinate water in a cheaper and better way. And one thing they found, again, experimentally a few years ago, when nanotubes became a fashion thing, they started to throw everything they have in nanotubes. And they threw water in nanotubes. And the thing they found on throwing water in nanotube is that if you calculate the flow of water in a nanotube, using normal hydrodynamic equations, and you measure, it goes exactly like this graph. That's a nanometer. So I'm going down, and the enhancement flow means the ratio between what I got from what I calculate goes up to 900. Means that it flows 900 times faster than should be doing. So there is something new in water flowing in nanotubes. Okay, so people start to make all kinds of theories about that, and why not us? Let's look what happened in our non-water two-length scale particle flowing into nanotubes and see if we can get anything similar to what experimental shows. So now we are going to challenge ourselves a little bit. You didn't notice before, but the water I was using before was just repulsive. You understand? I didn't want to have a liquid gas bugging me in this diffusion. I didn't want to have the liquid phase bugging me. So I threw away the attraction. So I threw away all the liquid gas, etc. But now I decided I'm going to put it back. Okay, I'm going to suffer more. I'm going to ask myself, what's the effect of this attraction? So I still have the two length scales, but one of the length scales is actually attractive. I'm going to have here just to show what we do to calculate this enhancement flow. We can get the average velocity, the flow in the x direction, by the ratio between the difference in pressure you put in the two sides and the length of the tube. And this constant that relates these two quantities in the normal hydrodynamic equations is related to viscosity. And viscosity is related to diffusion. So the diffusion I can get from the simulations, I put that back there, and I can, you know, I can relate this gamma from hydrodynamics from the gamma I get from the simulations, because the simulations give me the velocity. I do have this, I do have that, so I have two gammas. One gamma, if the calculations from hydrodynamics are okay, and another gamma, that's the real deal. So I calculate this enhancement flow, okay? Just as the experimental people would do. First thing I show is the cut. So I cut my tube for different diameters, and you can see that start to form layers. And the interesting part is I'm going to compare now when you have attraction between the particles and you don't have attraction between the particles. And just pay attention to the first slide that's going to show next, that you are going to see that there is a difference. Because when you don't have attraction, means when attraction doesn't matter, you have much more organization. And this organization is dictated by the wall. So it's like you have the influence of the wall at the first layer, because the wall is not hydrogen bonding to the particles. So it kind of gives you the structure of the wall, and you kind of replicate that. But besides that, you just have layers and layers, and you form this line in which it just diffuse. Another thing is that you have, this is the probability of the time in which things pass, and you can see a peak for this probability of the flow. But when you have just a repulsive, you can see that you start to have two times, because the central part of will not be attracted to attached to the wall, so you flow faster. Depending on the wall, if I made the wall hydrophilic, the central part is going to flow slower. So it depends on the type of the wall you can play. You can have two layers of water. And it's none when you manipulate water inside structures like the ethanol, when you drag the sugar, use water for that. And one thing people know is that a lot of water gets attached to the wall. So the bulk, the central water, behaves completely different than the wall water. And here, just to show the same thing now with the probability, the different peaks. And here's our graph on enhancement flow. And you can see the real difference when you make attractive or not is that when you make attractive, because you have this difference, this transitions between layers, you have this kinks that was actually observed in experiments. When you just don't have attraction, you just have a continuous increase for the enhancement flow. You still, you know, you have enhancement flow, but you can see from the numbers that our simulations give numbers that are not comparable with the experimental numbers. It's still much slower. But I might say that even if you use full SPC, TIP file, whatever water you choose, all the numbers will be much lower than the experiments. So there is a mystique. There's still a mystery. And for this mystery, I bet my type of models are not good enough, because I'm sure they are related with the interaction between wall and water. And there is no model in the planet. There is no classical model in the planet that's able to reproduce what happens with the interactions with all wall particle interactions. So part of this difference have to come from quantum something. Unfortunately, I need to do that with so many particles that it would be impossible to take any quantum. You understand? I'm looking for flow. Flow means lots of particles, okay? So, but at least we are getting the right trend. And now I'm comparing, showing the thing. Finally, I just pushed myself to the limit, and I said, let's look what happens in the wall, even though I know my model is not perfect for the wall, okay? But let's look what happens to the wall. And when you look to the pressure against density at the wall, I can see there is a huge difference between rigid walls and flexible walls. What I mean by rigid walls and flexible walls. In a real biological systems, walls are not fixed. You know, they can do that, okay? So we did the two system, a system in which now it's just two parallel walls, and one can do that, and another one just stick like that. The one that can do that, particles is going to always accommodate in one specific structure. When I have a rigid wall, I'm going to see this van der Waal loops. That means that my system on the wall is phase separated. So this is a normal phase separate. This happens at the wall. For different densities, I have the coexistence of areas in which the system is disordered and areas in which you have stripes. So the system at the wall, even if I don't take all the details into account, is already saying that at the wall, things can go very bizarre. Okay? So that's a region that needs to be more explored and pointed at, because many of our bio systems, things happen at the wall. You know, there is wall, they are confined, and a lot of the physics have at the surface. So interfaces are the next good target for what? So let's summarize. So what we could do and what we couldn't do. So with very simple models, what you could do is to explore properties and understand properties of water that I would call are volumetric. They depend on bulk and a lot of water. And even in confinement, there are properties like the diffusion and the quick flux that is still dependent on volume. We still have a long way to go, because even in this classical models for water, none of those models is able to give a good dielectric constant. So we cannot do simple sodium chloride in water. So still we need to develop better models on that to understand what would be the limits in which you can do classical or not. Thank you very much.
It's a very interesting talk. Thank you very much. I have a question regarding this superflow. When you do the simulation, what's the temperature you're using? The room temperature or?
Yes, for this, because for the experiments, they use around room temperature. So for our simulations, we also use the room temperature. You know, everything was written in dimensionless units because we do, but we tune the model for the region which would be room temperature for the flow.
Okay. So in the simulation, you know, because we know that the surface tension can affect the flow of the water, right? So is that considered in your simulation?
Yeah. What we, you know, our tube is fixed. Yeah. So all the thermodynamics is not on the tube. The tube is just dynamics. The thermodynamics is in the reservoir. And the reservoir are bulk-like. They are very big. So then I can discount on that part. So the temperature is not fixed inside the tube. The temperature is fixed in the reservoir outside the tube. The tube is just the transient for flowing the particles. There is no temperature. There is no thermostat in the tube. The thermostat is outside the tube. And the particles flow because I make a very huge gradient of particles between the two sides. Just, I completely forgot to show the video. You see, there is a huge, so I put the thermostat here and here, and here I just monitor the thing. One thing I did that I'm redoing now is that I'm using zero velocity boundary conditions for that. Now I'm testing if the boundary conditions for the simulations, this is almost all simulations when you have confined, they specify that the particles at the surface, they will not move too much at the very surface. So that's fixed boundary condition. Now I'm moving the walls and trying to see what would be the effect of not using, you know, putting some dispersion forces on the wall. We didn't do that here.
So is the wall of this nanotube at 0K?
They're fixed, so they don't have temperature. No temperature in the tube. We are now redoing that with temperature, so the particles actually move in the nanotube, and actually they have some stress with the, this, we didn't have that.
So you mentioned all these anomalies that water has. Is water really completely unique, or are there other materials?
Some of the anomalies that water have, other materials also have. For the diffusion coefficient, silica have. But silica have in 1,000 centigrade. So in understanding, in our world, it's just water they have. In a few other materials, they will have, but it's only in things that you only can achieve, that will be the density anomaly, the diffusion anomaly, and the two liquid phases, only the two liquid phases that you cannot see in water. You could see in phosphorus. Okay, but you don't see the others. So the combination is not obvious that you need for the two liquid phases to have all the other anomalies. So it's still some global picture that's under construction. But the 72 anomalies is just water. That's a huge number of anomalies.
And this two length scale model, for, do you think it's applicable?
It's being used, Susilica. Any of those systems in which the density and diffusion anomaly, you just can shape it up, the two length scales, and you find. Now we are building up a model for polymers with two length scales, and they show anomalies. The only issue is that you have really to, it's not like you go to the lab and build any polymer and you're going to get anomalies. It's heavy to tune very finely the two anomalies. And why I'm worried about polymers is the reason that having something that runs fast when it's very dense is very interesting for making shoes. Because the shoes are always a combination of block copolymers in which one of the block copolymers is almost liquid-like and another is very solid. So you get something that's flexible and rigid. However, when you build that, you enter in a glass phase very easily when building this mixture. So if I could have things flowing quicker in a region in which is almost super cool for the polymer, that would be in a very interesting. So we are trying to build that in our lab, particularly because our state is the biggest producer of shoes in Brazil. And you don't know, but Brazil produces shoes like crazy. So there is a local interest in understanding that for polymers, but I can imagine that having something that diffuses faster when it's very dense have other interests as well for polymers and plastics.
Any other questions? Unless, thanks, speaker again.